ways, our nation was founded with an idea of an informed public being core to a self-governing nation. And we have an opportunity right now as we think about the role of news and information in communities to think about how can news and information help us overcome oppressive systems? How can news and information help us build power and find solutions? How can news and information help build bridges and connect us in new ways? It's a profound opportunity to stop and rethink and redesign. What does it look like to build journalism that is not for the public, but actually in relationship to the public?
Hey everyone, it's Hilde, and this is the Creating the Future podcast. I'm glad you've joined us here today. This is a place for us to explore what really creates social change. Beyond the assumption that change is slow and incremental, what creates the kind of dramatic change that we can see and feel? That's the question driving this podcast. What actually creates change? What will create the healthy, joyful future we all want to live in? I'm really excited to have Josh Stearns on the podcast today. Josh is leading the Public Square program at Democracy Fund, and their name says it all, a foundation focused on strengthening and expanding democracy. Josh's work at the foundation is focused on the role of journalism in supporting democracy. His work is all about supporting leaders who are rebuilding local news and advancing more equitable journalism. Leaders who are defending civil rights online, a huge task. And the even bigger task of holding social media platforms accountable for their impact on our democracy and our society. When I talk with Josh, it expands how I think about all those interrelated issues, and especially how each of us can play a part in making journalism more accountable to the truth. And so it is my joy to welcome Josh today. Hi there, Josh. It is so good to have you. I am just so glad you're here today.
I'm really glad to be here too. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I am as well. Could you just tell our listeners a little bit about what in your life led you to get into social change work?
Sure. I grew up in the Finger Lakes and went to college around the Adirondack Mountains. I grew up amidst a lot of organizing and campaigns focused on reclaiming indigenous land rights. And today, I live just down the road from the Intentional Community of Northampton Association of Education and Industry, which, you know, David Ruggles and Sojourner Truth helped create in the 1840s with a vision of creating a just and cooperative community and industry around silk in a way to undermine Southern cotton and the use of enslaved labor. So those bookends of my life have taken me on a journey. And through those places, I've wandered through stories and lessons from Helen and Scott Nearing's homestead in Harborside, Maine, to Jane Addams' Hull House work with immigrant communities in Chicago, and Miles Horton's civil rights and organizing school in Tennessee, the Highlander Center. These places have literally been on the path of my journey, but have also been profoundly important to me, and place is profoundly important to me. So I think my work has been animated by these places and by the people and communities and stories that have woven through them. And in, I think, these people and stories, you begin to see a thread that connects a lot of aspects of my career and how I found myself in social change. And I think really throughout my life, I've been working to shift power at the intersection of institutions and communities, exploring kind of what it takes to cultivate flourishing communities and to build power with those communities and to leverage and transform institutions to be more accountable and responsive and representative of those communities. And so much of that work has been organizing in various forms and modes. And I've done that across education and media and philanthropy and democracy.
You have just explained why I have been excited to have this conversation. You know, in all of both the studying, the immersing, and the work that you've done, what do you see happening when change is happening? What actually creates change? What in your experience are you noticing that actually creates change?
Yeah, I'm so lucky to get to work with people on the front lines of change-making efforts all across our country. And it may come as no surprise, given my last answer, that some of the most profound and exciting change I've seen taking place has really been place-based and authentically rooted and emerging from community. I hear a lot about top-down change efforts, the one big idea, the one amazing innovation, or the one bold leader who has a plan to scale. But really, when I see durable, resilient change taking root, I tend to see it happening from the bottom up. This kind of change is often grounded in deep relationships built over time, and it's catalyzed by new models of connection and communication, and developed and sustained by people of color and immigrants and indigenous peoples, especially those who are women and queer and transgender, who have for a long time been innovating and imagining alternatives to oppressive systems. And for a long time, they have not been centered or resourced or listened to. So when I see change happening, that's what it looks like to me, is it's bottom up, it's grown authentically from communities, and it's rooted in relationships.
Can you share an example, a story, something that you've seen?
I'd love to tell you the story of June Walker. June Walker is a 65-year-old Detroit resident. For 2 years, Miss Walker had been making payments on her house to a fake landlord who didn't actually own the house and who disappeared after the last payment was made. Miss Walker, who had previously been unhoused, was paying $500 a month out of her $700 disability check. And 2 months after what she believed was her last payment, Miss Walker got an eviction notice from the actual owners of the house, an out-of-state company based in Florida.
Oh, wow.
A local news organization called Outlier Media broke this story. And through their investigations, they revealed that as many as 1 in 10 residents facing eviction in Detroit were duped by con artists who sold or rented out houses they didn't actually own. Outlier's story about Miss Walker led to the Michigan Attorney General to release consumer alerts. It sparked promises of new legislation. Local housing advocates used the story to raise more than $800,000 in new grants to support residents. And after all of that, Miss Walker finally got the deed to her house. But Outlier Media doesn't look like a traditional news organization or a legacy newspaper. They started out by creating a two-way text messaging platform where Detroit residents could look up information about housing issues, laws, and resources. The focus was not reporting the news. It was on creating a service that could equip people with the information they need to build power and improve their lives. Today, something like 8,000 residents a week get information over text message from Outlier Media. And the questions that people ask now guide Outlier's journalism. So they turn that curiosity into investigative journalism that reveals power challenges, that reveals inequities, and it closes information gaps and accountability gaps in the city. So it's a way in which community members are being empowered by information, and those same community members are then empowering the journalists to create change together. This came about because Sarah Alvarez, who founded Outlier Media, started by listening to her community. And Outlier Media is one of more than 400 new nonprofit newsrooms that have been built around the country over the last 20 years.
What you're really talking about is getting to the real reason that we're doing some of the work that we do. We may be running a media company. We may be running a food bank. We may be doing whatever we do. We get so into the doing of it. What you're really talking about is, why did she start this media company in the first place? Media company is a tool towards what she really wanted to accomplish.
That's right. And I think that at a moment where we are facing, in many respects, a crisis in local news and information, you know, with the closing of thousands of newspapers and the rise of misinformation, somebody might be inspired to just start a new news organization modeled after a newspaper. And it might be that they just want to get news in people's hands. And that in of itself is a critical thing to be focused on. But what's so powerful about Sarah Alvarez, as well as others in communities across the country who are rethinking what journalism is for, is they're starting with how do we build strong communities? And what is the role of news and information in strong communities? In many ways, our nation was founded with an idea of an informed public being core to a self-governing nation. And we have an opportunity right now as we think about the role of news and information in communities to think about how can news and information help us overcome oppressive systems? How can news and information help us build power and find solutions? How can news and information help build bridges and connect us in new ways? It's a profound opportunity to stop and rethink and redesign. What does it look like to build journalism that is not for the public, but actually in relationship to the public?
Your emphasis, when you just said building bridges and connecting us, we are in an age right now where so much of media seems like its purpose is the opposite, is to devolve those bridges and to separate us and to take sides, and that there's power and money in having us listen to that same music over and over and over again, the same song about how we should fear each other. And what you're talking about is something very, very different.
I am talking about something different. And there's a lot of reasons we are in the position we are in terms of how the media operates in our society. But one real driving force, as you highlighted, you mentioned power and money, is that as a nation, we have prioritized a commercial model for our media for a very long time. Whereas other democratic nations built robust non-commercial and public media systems, and then the commercial media system kind of grew up around that and filled in some gaps, our system has consistently, at every point when new technology was developed, whether it was radio or TV or cable or the internet, has started out with a sort of bold democratic promise of this new technology helping democratize how we connect and communicate. And over again, policies have been put in place that have privileged and benefited commercial interests and sort of commercialized those technologies and those media resources. And so we stand today at a point where our nation has a media that doesn't serve our democracy and doesn't serve our communities in many ways. Now, that is not to say that all media is anti-democratic, but it is to look across the system and see as a whole, how is media exacerbating the polarization that we have? How is media undermining our agency as citizens in our communities? How is media so quick to highlight problems and so slow to help us find solutions? We can approach media in a different way. And there are people doing that. It's no surprise that so many of these community-driven civic media entities that I see sprouting up around the country are setting up in alternative ownership models, largely nonprofits, but also cooperatives and others, because they are starting from a place not of how do we turn this into a business, but how do we build strong communities.
It's a very different why. It's a very different reason for existing. Can you talk a little bit, Josh, about the work that you're doing right now?
Yeah. At the Democracy Fund, we are really interested in investing in people and organizations who are helping us build an inclusive multiracial democracy. The work I do at Democracy Fund is specifically focused on news and information and the role of technology in our society. So I run our Public Square program, and we are helping develop and build these kind of new models of local journalism, both individual newsrooms like Outlier Media, which I mentioned before, but also whole networks in regions across the country, in North Carolina, and New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, New Jersey, where we're not just looking at one newsroom, because people don't get informed through one newsroom. People are informed by a wide array of news and information sources, and we need to think about the ecosystem that we're created, the relationships between these different kinds of news and information sources, and how it adds up to be a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. So we're building news and information ecosystems. We're supporting innovators on the ground who are building community-centered news and information for local communities. And we're supporting advocates and campaigners and organizers who are looking at how we hold technology responsible for the role that they play in our democratic society while exploring the systematic, deep structural changes we need in our media and technology system to get ourselves to a more inclusive multiracial democracy in the future. So that includes policy change and other structural changes that can help lock in the kind of dynamics that help support the pro-democratic society we want to see.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you explained that. One of the things that we've experienced in my hometown of Tucson, Arizona right now is we used to have two main newspapers that consolidated into one main newspaper that was sold, and now some big conglomerate owns the story of so many local newspapers. We're in Tucson. The big behemoth up the road is Phoenix. And the Arizona Republic is theirs. It's a Gannett paper. It's owned by a large corporation. Here in Tucson, they finally got rid of pretty much all of our on-the-ground reporters. There's very, very little local reporting. And many of those individuals formed a nonprofit to actually tell the story of what's going on in the community. And so that is where we put our support. In our household, that is where we put our support. That is what we subscribe to. We also subscribe to the Arizona Republic all the way up the road because they're doing some of the best investigative journalism. And if you don't have local people on the ground, you don't have investigative journalism. How does one find out anything if you don't? How does, I mean, just the basics. If you've got nobody asking the questions, how do you get the answers? So we're seeing it everywhere. And the fact that you're focusing on those nonprofits like the Tucson Sentinel, which we are now subscribing to, because that's real journalism. It's telling us what we need to know in order to be real citizens without the bias and the pulling the local folks out of it.
Yeah, we really believe that, like you're finding there, people are turning to a multitude of sources. And that's one of the reasons why, in addition to supporting individual newsrooms, we're also building these news ecosystems, which I would say include legacy newspapers and public radio and television stations and digital new hyperlocal sites and nonprofit organizations, but also libraries and universities and other community institutions that are focused on informing and engaging our citizens and our residents. That news ecosystem we're seeing in places like North Carolina right now that's facing incredible devastation because of recent storms, news ecosystems are banding together and working to serve their communities as a whole rather than trying to compete with each other and see who can get the scoop. They're saying, no, we're in this together for our communities. And so building those relationships that can create different kinds of structures and serve communities in different kinds of ways is so important. And I wanted to highlight one key thing you said, because we did talk about the challenges that the media creates in connecting us before. But I want to note, as you've experienced, there's also a real downfall and a real risk when media disappears. And so, you know, we're facing a moment where in the last 20 years, more than 2,000 newspapers have closed across the country, and newsroom employment has dropped by 57%. Those newspapers that are around sometimes are ghost newspapers staffed by just a couple of people trying to hold up this longstanding institution. And the research is really clear on what happens when a community loses local news. They have more government corruption. They have declines in civic engagement. There's more division and polarization and less voting, and more misinformation floods into those zones because there's information gaps and fewer people run for office. So we know that we have to begin rebuilding the news and information infrastructure that our communities need. And that is going to involve supporting these new startups that are coming on, these new nonprofits, but also putting your money behind the kind of investigative reporting that you said you support and where you really value it. We have to get really creative because historically, news and information hasn't been a charitable or philanthropic activity in America. But we have to shift our thinking. If we care about food banks, if we care about housing justice, we have to care about the people who reveal those things and research solutions too.
It is a very different model because what we are so used to is we buy a newspaper. It is a transaction. And what you're talking about is citizen responsibility for having knowledge. I mean, that's a very, very different purpose. You know, we talked before about it. It's getting to the why of it, getting to the purpose of it, the what we actually want to accomplish. That's a very, very different model.
That's right. And I think as we think about rethinking journalism and as we imagine different ways that we can be connected through the media, we also have to be very clear-eyed and reckon with the history of many communities who have been left out of the media, at best left out, and oftentimes actually harmed, where local news has actively worked to disenfranchise Black communities or perpetuated harmful and dangerous narratives about communities of color. And those same communities are being targeted today with a flood of racialized disinformation. So part of building an inclusive multiracial democracy has to be about supporting media that can live up to the promise of that kind of democracy. We have to be about building a catalytic new kind of media that is centered in and grown out of the experiences of folks who have often been marginalized by the media.
What do you say, Josh, to folks who anymore are so fed up that they are getting their primary news from places like The Daily Show and Seth Meyers?
You know, it's interesting. There's a person in North Carolina who started something called the Triangle Blog Blog. Yes, Blog Blog is intentional. Her name is Melody Kramer, and she is a humor writer who used to write for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and also used to work for Terry Gross. And she has created a comedy-centric news and information organization for the Research Triangle of North Carolina that's focused on civic joy. It does incredible, hard-hitting reporting. It reveals tons of new information about candidates for office, but it also mobilizes people to engage in their democracy with fun and humor and lightness and joy. And it has been incredible to watch. And so when I think about The Daily Show and I think about John Oliver, for example, John Oliver has hired multiple journalists from ProPublica, one of our nation's leading investigative journalism outfits, because the space sometimes between humor and information doesn't have to be so far apart. John Oliver and The Daily Show are quick to say that they're not journalists, and they are not trying to do journalism. They're often what they're doing is building on journalism. They're actually taking reports from local newspapers and others and building on them. But I think the point we can learn from that is that we have to have new ways of thinking about the way that we distribute and share news and information. That's why, you know, places like Outlier are thinking about transforming how they deliver information. In Chicago, City Bureau has a documenters program where they pay thousands of people to go to city and town meetings and document in whatever way they feel is best. And then those citizens work with local journalists on creating stories based on the documentation. So they're creating literally the first draft of history, as journalism is often called, but through citizen engagement. So journalism, taking part in journalism, is a civic act. In Oakland, El Timpano, which largely serves Mayan and Latino immigrants in Oakland, California, worked with scientists on health reporting and then created opportunities for local people to bring soil samples and get their soil in their homes and yards tested. So to connect people's lived experience and daily lives to the journalism, we have to make it matter for people in a way that doesn't make people feel like there's nothing they can do, but actually builds their agency and civic power. And there can be a lot of joy in that too.
I'm so glad you mentioned joy, because the focus of the news, the old, if it bleeds, it leads, the focus of the news is almost entirely on what's wrong. And what motivates people so frequently is what's possible. It's why that's where our focus is at Creating the Future, is all on moving beyond just fixing the problem. Okay, once the problem is gone, what do you actually really want? And we don't get lots of examples of that. What happens with the news so frequently is it's triggering the part of the brain that is entirely reflexive, is entirely survival and fear-based, which makes us very, very easy to manipulate. When you're in fear, you're entirely easy. And so much of the news feeds into that. In the olden days, the joyful part of the news was in what they called the women's section. It was who was getting together to have a little luncheon and who was having a party. Sometimes we may have a little community section that focuses on what a nonprofit is doing frequently to help people who are not in good shape. I think we're really missing some of what helps citizens become engaged by failing to tell the stories that are encouraging and exciting and inspiring and give hope. And if we don't have hope and all we hear is how horrible it is, that is disengaging for us.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think what we're seeing is, in the absence of that, communities trying to self-organize ways of finding that, because we need it. And so what I'm seeing is people starting Facebook pages called the Good News page about their community, and they're trying to collect stories of positive impacts that people are having in their communities. And they're also trying to counteract the knee-jerk reactions of social media users, which so often go to fighting and harassment and other things. And that's a sign, it's a call to action for us, that whether it's on social media or whether it's in your community or whether it's through text messaging or a website or a printed newspaper, the media is actually at our disposal in a new way. We can all take steps to share trustworthy information, to lift up powerful stories, to find and learn about the people in our communities who are making change. And then we can connect other people to those stories. And so I think we have a profound opportunity to think of ourselves not as people who, you know, the media happens to us, but actually, what can we do with the media to create the kind of change in the communities that we care about? And that is a really exciting thing. And what's unique about this new era of news organizations is that they're embracing that. They're being built around that rather than sort of being in a literal ivory tower sometimes, which some, you know, news organizations have been, and saying, you know, we'll gather the facts, you can do with it whatever you think. We report, you decide, is how it's often traditionally viewed. And instead we're seeing, no, we're all in this community together and we have a stake in it. And the power of journalism can be shared by people.
If you had one thing that you could share with our listeners that they can do to make a difference in their community, what would you suggest to folks?
Well, I think building on that last point, I would say change the story. So Yochai Benkler, who's a legal scholar and has studied networks and communities and rights online, said something to the effect of, a country's constitutional culture is made up of the stories we tell each other about the kind of nation we are. And so you can look at that nationally. We're coming up on a major national election. We are facing climate change issues. We are facing deepening inequality. And you can ask yourself, what is the stories that we are telling ourselves about who we are? And you can decide whether it's nationally or in your community that you want to change some part of that story. If you're inspired by that idea of how to change the story, I think there's lots of ways you can roll up your sleeves and do that. You can get involved with a local news organization in ways that we've done for a long time, by sending a letter to the editor or an op-ed or pitching a story. But you can also hold them accountable. Tell them what you need and want to see. You can translate your passion and concerns into coverage. And you can seek out these new innovative nonprofits. There's an organization called the Institute for Nonprofit News, INN.org, and another one called Lion Publishers, the local independent online news publishers. They've got databases where you can search and find these news organizations in your communities, in your state. You can support them. You can reach out and volunteer with them. You can become a documenter. The Documenters Program in Chicago I mentioned before is now in 19 cities across the country. So I think there's all these steps you can do to kind of take back the media. And the thing I would say is that if you want to change the story, think about how you can become a hub for trusted information in your own network. And that network could just be your family. It could be your community. It could be the PTO. It could be the local book club. But how do you connect people to trustworthy information? How do you connect people across communities? How do you debunk or pre-bunk misinformation? And then finally, I would say, how can you, in any way that's appropriate for you and your family, move resources to more just and equitable media? Because we're at a moment where people are doing incredible work, but so many of these organizations are just getting off the ground. And if we believe in this vision of what media can be, then we need to take steps to back it. That means, you know, moving resources through small donations, through fundraising campaigns. Coming up at the end of this year, there will be a campaign called News Match, where national funders and local funders will match your donations to nonprofit news organizations. So you can double your money and give to these news organizations. There's so many little ways that can have such big impact in reshaping the media in America and all the ways that that can fuel change in the issues we care about.
You know, at Creating the Future, we work with a framework we call catalytic thinking. And it is a framework of questions that leads us to what is possible. And part of that framework is asking about the conditions that need to be in place for success to happen. And some of those questions are, what do people need to know? What do they need to understand? What do they need to feel? And what you have been sharing with us today is really addressing all of those conditions that need to be in place for us to have the world that we want. I'm so grateful to you, Josh, both for the work that you're doing and for sharing it with us today. And I hope you'll come back and share more of what's going on and what you're seeing. So thank you again so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It was great to be here.
I'm so grateful to Josh for sharing his vast experience with us. We all tend to think about the media as this big monolith that we have no control over. What Josh's stories make clear, though, is the importance of that bottom-up approach. Local stories rooted in community, in the things that affect people close to home. Even just the simple fact that local media can itself build community. Josh reminds us that all politics is personal, and that because of that, we can all make a difference. Even the seemingly small act of being the truth teller among our families and friends. You know, it reminded me of one of the people in my own family who we've nicknamed The Source. When any of us wants to understand what's happening in the news, she's the one we ask, "Can you explain what just happened?" Josh reminds us that we can all be that for each other. I love the hope that Josh's message gives because it's so easy to feel Josh reminds us that we can all be that for each other. I love the hope that Josh's message gives because it's so easy to feel overwhelmed in the face of big national news. What Josh is talking about is not that big, scary thing we call the media. It's about the power of information for building community from the ground up. And that can all start with, as Josh put it, seeing yourself as a hub for trusted information in your own network. It might just start with donating to local news sources in your own community. Josh shared a great list of links to dive deeper into all the stuff he shared during our conversation. You'll find those links at the podcast page, along with other resources from Creating the Future. And of course, if this episode got you thinking, we hope you'll subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for being with us today and for wanting to create a better future for our world. We'll see you next time here at Creating the Future.